Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
It's Kyle O'Reilly.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff Jarrett.
I'm Rocky Asuka Romero.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk, home of Lou Gowen.
Support WrestleTalk.
Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Lou Gowen is, quote the Raven, nevermore.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it. Bro.
But you really should support WrestleTalk, and you should follow them and subscribe right now.
Ollie told me to say this, so I guess it's okay.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Make sure you watch and listen to WrestleTalk.
Or better yet, take just a moment, stop what you're doing, and bask in their glory.
Do us all a favor and subscribe.
Congratulations, you got here. Now subscribe and support. Thanks.
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble podcast. I am Lou Cohen and I'm joined by El Fakador Laurie Blake.
On the weekend?
On a weekend episode?
Weird.
That's amazing. How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you.
Good, good. It's a bit of an interesting one as well because we've already recorded the main content of this episode. Mm-hmm. We recorded it yesterday. Now, we're now recording this intro on a Friday and the outro as well. So I can't quite remember all the things we discussed.
No, there was a lot, though.
There was a lot of things discussed.
A lot of mailbag.
Oh, this is a bumper mailbag. Because I decided I want to be out with the mailbag. Because we were behind by like 2 or 3 weeks because Ollie's like, no, 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah. By the way, spoilers for the end of the episode.
Yeah, we managed to complete the task.
We get through the mailbag.
We get through it all. So the mailbag now for our Patreon pledge hammers is back open once again. Mm-hmm. So feel free to get them all in there. Having said that, we do say on the episode that Crap Gimmicks is going to return next week. But I don't know if we're going to be doing a weekend episode next week because it's all out.
Yeah.
So I think we are. We'll definitely record it on the Friday if we do. But I don't know if we're going to, because we're going to be at Royal Quest.
Oh, yeah.
And during the day, and then it's all out in the evening doing the live stream. So I don't know if it'll just get lost, because that's the problem when there's a pay-per-view weekend, the reason why we don't do the episodes and things like that, when we do the NXT live streams instead. It's because the weekend video just gets lost.
Yeah.
And the weekend podcast just gets lost, because no one's there. Everyone's like, why do I care? Like, what do I care about this?
So much content.
I don't care about what you're talking about now. Talk about it all out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, so it may be around next week. It may be not. That's a decision we'll make in the week. But, however, here is an email. I'm going to see if I can get a name for you. It comes from Leandro, I'm going to say. Leandro Shimura, which is a cool-ass name.
Yeah.
It's a long, odd email, so get involved. It says, hello, WrestleTalk lads and the lady. My name is Leandro Shimura. I know you're going to butcher my name, Luke, and I don't blame you. It's a Greek name and a Japanese surname, so I'll explain how to pronounce it. Okay, so it's like this.
Was it Leandro?
Leandro? Yes, you're absolutely
Leandro.
Right. Yeah, Leandro, and then Shimura.
That was my best Greek accent. Yeah. Leandro.
Leandro Shimura. Very good. I've been watching WrestleTalk for 2 years now, and I've been a pledge hammer for over a year, and I've been meaning to write you guys for a long time. How long, you ask? Since you asked how WrestleTalk brought me back into wrestling. But that's not the story I'm going to tell right now, because I've got better ones. This is going to be a long email, so if you want to cut a few parts, be my guest. First, let's get this out of the way. I'm from Brazil, and my grandparents were Japanese and Italian, so I'm kind of weird. I'm a geek, not a nerd, because I ain't smart. I like video games, comics, and wrestlings. I do watch Screenstalker. I'll even reply to my comment once. Yeah, I know that's a loser's brag, but it's all I got. But also a retired novice MMA fighter, so I'm kind of a big guy. And scary, according to my friends. I work a very boring and stressful job in an industry of property law firm, and it takes 10 hours of my day away, not including transportation, which adds another 3. Introduction's done. Let me get down to business. I've got a Rusev hey. I took a vacation and went to New York during WrestleMania week. I'm not a WWE fan. I prefer the indie, so I went to see the G1 Supercard, but got to watch Impact's Unite We Stand, which had the... a match that I just thought was either going to be the best match ever or a complete train wreck, which was Rob Van Dam and Sabu. Is it versus the Lucha Brothers?
Oh, yeah.
Where you're like, good Lord, RVD and Sabu in this day and age.
Yeah. How much do they care? How high is Rob Van Dam? There's so many.
How high is Sabu? And then, he's getting up onto that top rope. Is he going to fall? I don't know. It's Sabu. I mean, to be honest, that was a question for Sabu in the 90s. It's not 2019. I also got to see Rev Pro, Wrestling Revolvers, Pancakes and Powerbombs, and USA versus the World. I rented a room in a hotel in front of Madison Square Garden where the G1 would be held. Let me emphasize how important G1 Supercard was for me. I went twice to Japan but could not watch a New Japan show because every time I went there, they were in hiatus after a big tournament. Last time, they even came up with a tag team tournament which ended when I arrived. I'm a huge fan of Japanese wrestling, especially Hiroshi Tanahashi and his wonderful hair. I went to United We Stand, which ended at 1:30 a.m. Got the last train and arrived at our hotel by 2:30. The following day, WrestleCon would begin, but I woke up late since I arrived late, arrived home late at about 10 a.m. So I rushed to the event. When I arrived on the hotel lobby, I saw Sho and Yo from Roppongi 3K. Please note, this is not the Rusev Hey. I did not want to bother them, so I just left. On my way to the event on Times Square, I saw none other than the Rogue General himself, Bad Luck Fale. This is not the Rusev Hey yet. No pictures once again. Let me clarify, I don't like taking pictures at all, especially selfies. This will be relevant later on. I got to the event and I watched the shows. After RevPro ended, I went back to the hotel. While waiting for an elevator, I met my favorite wrestler, Hiroshi Tanahashi. I couldn't let the chance pass, so I screamed, "Tanahashi-san!" He was clearly tired. He fought alongside Will Ospreay, which I got a signature, humble brag, against Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr., which was a fantastic match. Ooh. Absolutely brilliant match. But since he's been the face of New Japan for over 20 years, he would never turn down a fan. I asked him for a picture and he agreed. You can see I never took a selfie in my life because I'm obviously struggling to take the picture. This is not the Rusev Hey yet! The following day, I watched Pancakes and Powerbombs and went back to the hotel. I had a couple of hours before the G1, so I decided to hunt for a regular PS4. Mine broke a few months prior, and I only found out the Pro in the New York stores, which I didn't want, but ended up getting since it was the only one I found. A lot of wonderful, pointless addendums to this story, which I really like.
It's a real ramble.
Real ramble. I really enjoy it. Supposedly, there was one at Target a couple of blocks away that had one, so I decided to go there. I pressed the elevator button and waited. The hotel was huge, and it took about 14 to 16 elevators. Wow. There was about 14 to 16 elevators, and the farthest one arrived. I ran and got inside, and I saw through the corner of my eyes that there were two guys in there. And I just looked and screamed like Ollie, "Oh my God, it's Kota Ibushi and Hiroshi Tanahashi." So I calmly and respectfully panicked. And my brain went, Windows blue screen of death. Tanahashi, realizing I was silently panicking, remember he's the face of New Japan for 20 years, said, "Destino." He's a cool guy. Then I realized I was wearing my Los Ingo Bananas D Japan t-shirt. It was the Tekken crossover one written Destino in the center. Even though they are probably buddies, I mean Tanahashi, Ibushi, and LIJ guys, my brain panicked even more and I started thinking in kayfabe, they're enemies. I nervously smiled and Tanahashi started asking if I was going to the G1. I've been to Japan and I know Japanese people have a hard time speaking English, so in order to avoid him embarrassing himself, that's what I thought. Remember, I was panicking. I hastily answered, "Yes!" Even before he finished the sentence. And after an eternity that took the elevator to go from the fifth floor to the lobby, the door opened, I bowed to them and wished them luck on their matches. Tanahashi smiled and thanked, while Ibushi simply nodded. And as I ran, and he's crossed out here, like a little girl, nope, that's sexist, let's try that again, like Randy Orton avoiding bumps, I'm sure Tanahashi did not recognize me. He's just used to fans panicking around him. Picture it didn't happen, but I just got the previous encounter. And there is our picture of our man here with Tanahashi himself.
Oh.
What a lovely, lovely chap. I once shared an elevator with Kushida. It's about the only elevator story I've got. And in that story, I was also silently panicking and wanted to say something like, "Hey, good luck with the Super J Cup today."
Yeah.
But just couldn't form any words.
No, and just then stood there quietly.
Stood there quietly. And then after he got out, I turned to my wife and was like, "That was a Kushida.
That was Kushida.
That was Kushida."
Do you think there'll be, God forbid it happens, but Tanahashi passes away?
Oof, yeah.
Is there a Treehouse of Horror style thing where someone gets his hair transplanted and becomes Tanahashi?
Yeah. I like it. Like the episode of The Simpsons.
Yeah, where Homer gets Snake's hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a parody of the Twilight Zone episode Dead Man's Shoes. Ooh. Fun little fact for you there. Not a great episode, but the Simpsons parody of it is frankly hilarious.
Yes, amazing.
It's really, really good. it's the line where it's like, where you're going, you're going to see a lot of nuns. Hell! anyway, well, that was such a long email. I think we may have to bump into the show. So we're going to be talking about NXT versus AEW. Who's going to win the Wednesday Night War? Here is the show. About the AEW NXT Wednesday Night War, which has been on this card for some time now. Essentially, the story goes that WWE were waiting for when AEW would announce what day they were on. Because there were all these rumors that they might be on Tuesday nights, because they made Tuesday Night Dynamite. They trademarked that last year when they were trademarking AEW and All Elite Wrestling and all that sort of stuff.
That was a play to make WWE feel safe.
Maybe. But then it turns out they were going to be on a Wednesday night. So all of these rumors started to fly around. Excuse me. That they may go onto FS1 because WWE have got a deal with Fox now for SmackDown. Sure. So maybe they'll go onto FS1, be a show there. And Meltzer was reporting that there was going to be a live 2-hour show. They were going to not completely change the format, but they're going to have to stop doing it as a taped thing. They're going to have to do it as a live show because that's the only way to compete with AEW. And then over the weekend, last weekend, the game changed because all of a sudden, a huge announcement was going to be announced for Raw, and that huge announcement was set to be that NXT is going to be moving to the USA Network, which is the current home for Raw and SmackDown. And it was going to be a 2-hour live show, and they were going to make this big announcement on Raw, which they ended up not doing. Meltzer says, well, they were going to do the announcement, but then just changed their minds. My theory is because they were annoyed that the story leaked early.
Yeah, and it took some of the wind out of their sails for that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So it's now, they just released a press release and just said, hey, it's going to be on Wednesday night, and it'll be on Thursday nights if you're still one of those network folk, and that's fine. There's no international deals for it thus far. This is only an American thing. So if you're one of our American viewers, you will get it on the network the following day. For everyone else, we're still getting it on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's fine. I don't mind too much. And imagine come January, here in the UK, that might change with the BT Sport thing.
Yeah, I guess so.
They'll probably get it. But, yeah, so it's now official. It's going to be starting 2 weeks before AEW starts on TNT.
Ooh.
And it's going to be live. It's going to be 2 hours, still taped at Full Sail, but it is now going to be a head-to-head show.
Wow.
What are your thoughts?
I mean, it's a baller move, isn't it? To be like, well, we're just going to go straight head to head with you.
Yeah.
I'm cynical as well. Massively.
Well,
cynical.
Yeah, but that's the WWE way.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah. It's that thing of
there's
like
a reason why NXT UK exists. And it's not because they wanted to make it UK.
Absolutely. But
brand.
Even for the point of like, if you actually wanted to make NXT the third WWE brand and put it on TV, why would you put it on a night like you could have had the same audience as AEW on a different night? And that would have been fine.
Exactly.
It doesn't have to be. You don't have to crush every competitor.
This has not been done.
I think the thing is, like, AEW existing and having their own show could have bolstered WWE's viewing figures across all their programming if they didn't program against AEW. Instead, they're now dividing already a divided audience. And instead, they could have got the rub from people watching AEW coming back into the fold, being like, there's other wrestling out there. There's this NXT thing. It's actually quite similar to AEW in terms of like the in-ring action. People could watch that.
Yeah.
On USA.
But this has not been done.
Thursday.
This has not been done to bolster the NXT brand.
No.
For everything that Triple H can tweet about, this has not been done to make NXT the third brand. This has solely been done to compete against AEW and, crucially, siphon away viewers from their show. Because it doesn't really matter if they win. And this has always been the thing. It doesn't matter if they win the ratings war. The important thing is it's taking viewers away from AEW.
Yeah.
And you know what? Their theory is quite sound. People recognize the WWE logo. They may not recognize the people on the NXT brand, but they recognize that WWE logo. And if it's advertised as WWE NXT, then people are going to watch it.
Yeah, especially if the rumors are true that, like, you know, main roster talent will be used, at least in the early going, in an attempt to bump the viewership and all that kind of stuff. Like, if you start suddenly putting, like, Becky Lynch's face on things, Seth Rollins, The Undertaker,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like, start calling in Shawn Michaels again, like, you know, Shawn Michaels. I imagine Shawn Michaels is going to start appearing much more.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, there is WWE has a lot of talent to leverage to make this a much bigger deal.
100%.
Like AEW is very much banking on the well-known in wrestling circles and also in music circles, like your Jerichos. But then everyone else is kind of like a lesser-known quantity than that. Like, very famous in wrestling, but not necessarily in mainstream.
That's completely it.
And I think WWE is going to do, you know, potentially even more, like, mainstream guests, leverage some of that, like, they've just got good relationships with a lot of sports teams, they've got good relationships with a lot of musicians. They're just going to chuck everything at the wall for this, I think.
I've got to imagine they're going to be doing everything they can to try and... I mean, let's not forget, when TNA put on a show on a Monday night to go directly head-to-head with them, that January 4th show, they brought back Bret Hart. Like, that was their Hail Mary. They were like, oh, you're putting on a competing show? Mm-hmm. We're going to bring Bret Hart back into the company and have him and Shawn Michaels hug in the middle of the ring.
Yeah.
Don't care if you got Hulk Hogan. Don't care if you got Rob Van Dam.
Yeah.
We've got Bret Hart back. And all of a sudden, everyone was like, oh my God, Bret Hart's back in WWE.
Yeah.
And so everyone watched that show.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame that this is what the business is. It's like there is enough room for both things. Like, well, there absolutely is enough room for both things, and you don't need to crush the competition anymore. It's not the 90s.
And the other thing as well with this is that WWE have decided to put this on the USA Network because it's available. It's in more homes than both TNT, but crucially FS1.
Yeah.
And this is very interesting because Fox had been telling their affiliates that their new wrestling show was coming to FS1.
Yeah.
They'd been told, we're going to put it on FS1. And the, you know, 11th hour, they've changed their minds and put it onto USA instead.
So they must be pissed at WWE, right?
Well, I can't imagine it's a particularly great relationship at the moment. Meltzer writes in The Observer, even though this deal is groundbreaking and makes NXT an economical, profitable brand, which has not been previously, all negotiations were primarily done as a counter to AEW's deal on TNT for 8 to 10 p.m. on Wednesday. Anyone who knows Vince McMahon knew the move would be a counter. The key point, though, is that a lot of people felt that the show will be lower rated on FS1, which is in fewer homes than TNT, which could lose in the ratings, something in this case McMahon couldn't stand for. So they were like, if AEW pulls better numbers than we do, I can't have that. So it's got to go in USA, where we're more likely going to win.
And this is apparently what superstars in WWE have been saying as well. Like, I think it was Fightful spoke to a bunch of, Sean Ross Sapp spoke to a bunch of people backstage, and he said that one of them had told him that they reckon they're going to lose in terms of attendance.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to have to anyway, I think, because AEW's doing stadiums and they're doing Full Sail.
Yeah, it's the same as arenas.
They're doing bigger arenas. But
it's like 14,000 seats, or like 9 to 14,000 seats compared to Full Sail, which is 400 people.
Exactly. And but they think they're going to win in the ratings.
Yeah,
like, you know,
I fully expect them to.
The backstage, they're going to win in ratings. But I guess that's the point. Is like, that doesn't matter because the bit you're fighting against isn't the like AEW was never going to be, at least in the initial point, a Goliath of the level that WWE grew to be over many, many years.
Oh yeah,
AEW was always going to be an alternative. Like it was always going to be something that wrestling fans, or people who have a very rich diet of wrestling, who like New Japan, who like Ring of Honor, go to as well. Like, it's just another string to the bow, one that also has TV time.
Yeah.
I don't know why WWE's panicking so freaking much about it. Like, they're panicking so much is because they've peed off every single member of their staff. So now that there's actually an alternative, they need to, like, they've mistaken that. It's like, we need to win in the audience terms. It's like, no, you need to win in the sort of just morale terms of people who work for you.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that want to leave and go work there.
Hey, man, if you're talking about a morale booster, the word is that they're going to get new contracts. The NXT guys were paid, you know, by all accounts, quite poorly. And actually, a lot of people who have turned down NXT have been very vocal about, you do get paid very poorly to be in NXT because the idea is you then go to the main roster and that's where you get your new contract.
Yeah.
Now they're going to be a national TV show. They're getting those main roster contracts.
Yeah, you got to think. So that's Adam a good Cole thing. And Gargano are going to get, like,
yeah, totally.
I think beyond the nature in which it's been done and the kind of the feeling behind the move, it's a really good deal for all the NXT guys who've been busting their asses
and making the best show,
and making the best show that WWE does. And it's amazing that we're going to see a 2-hour live Triple H vision of what a WWE product should be.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
And you know, it might be freaking terrible.
Yeah.
But like, if it's like NXT and it's like TakeOver, it could be one of the best things on television in terms of wrestling. Like,
and we don't know what AEW's weekly product is going to be, but it could end up being that Wednesday nights are like, that's the night you want to be tuning in.
Yeah.
It is going to be. We could almost be in that Monday Night War era where people were flicking between the shows. Like, I'm going to watch a bit of Raw and then I'm going to flick over and watch a bit of Nitro. Because, and then you've got your friends saying, like, dude, you've got to watch Nitro because Ric Flair's doing this. Yep. And you're like, oh my God, I need to switch the channel. Or I can't change the channel now. Stone Cold's in the ring. I want to see this. Yeah. And you're really going to create this amazing split audience
dynamic.
It's going
to be so hard for like live tweeting.
Oh,
like,
God, yeah.
It's going to be impossible.
Yeah, we've got website coverage to do. We've got rambles to do the following day.
I just think it's a great deal for NXT to go to USA, to be in more homes, for the guys and girls on the brand to have better contracts. Like, it's great for us as fans
to see a great time for wrestling
longer
fans.
Version of the show. No, there's nothing wrong with it. At all.
No, it's just a very cynical move on WWE's part. But you know what? I don't mind, really. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, completely cynical and it's a completely Vince McMahon thing to do. But it's great for wrestling fans. Mm. The slight downside to it could be, and this has been, Meltzer pointed this out in The Observer, which I hadn't really taken into consideration. Currently, this week of TV, on national TV, we've had 5 hours of content.
Yeah.
Come October, that number is going to be either 9 or 10. Because the rumor is Fox want to make SmackDown 3 hours. So you're going to get 3 hours of Raw on a Monday, 2 hours of AEW on a Wednesday, 2 hours of NXT on a Wednesday, and 3 hours of SmackDown on a Friday. Mm-hmm. The worry there is you're going to burn out your wrestling audience, because that's almost too much wrestling to watch.
It's not even almost too much wrestling to watch. It is too much wrestling to watch. That is, you know, and then on a pay-per-view week, add another 3 hours, or 7 if it's SummerSlam. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? WWE's already oversaturated its own market with its own product, and that is its major problem. That is why viewing figures and stuff are dropping, is because people just get burnt out and you can't go to every show because it's not affordable for most people. And like, if SmackDown's rolling through the same 5 towns over and over again on a never-ending tour loop, you're only going to go to one. Like, I would probably go to Raw and SmackDown once a year. I mean, they only come here once a year, really.
Oh, so we get twice.
Yeah, but once a year that I remember to know about.
I was going
to
say, even then, I would question going once a year because Raw tapings are usually quite boring.
Yeah, but like, 3 hours of that, 2 hours of SmackDown, 2 hours of NXT, then 7 hours of a pay-per-view or another three, like, that is 15 hours of stuff to watch. And if it wasn't, like, we could barely fit it in as our job to watch it.
Yeah.
So who has the time in their life regularly around going to work, seeing your friends, doing other things, to watch 15 hours of a product to know a story?
Yeah, that's it. It's a lot. And it's, you know, you can always argue that during the Monday Night War, there was 9 to 10 hours there because you had 2 hours of Raw, 2 hours of Nitro, actually 3 hours of Nitro before it dropped down to 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Then you had SmackDown and you had Thunder. But Thunder was a terrible TV show that no one watched. SmackDown was a show that people did watch, but it wasn't doing the numbers that Raw was doing. And then Nitro essentially collapsed under it. Like, WCW folded, you know, because they were just making terrible business, terrible, terrible business choice after terrible, terrible business choice, and writing, you know, mostly mediocre and often terrible TV because they have to split across two different shows. And WWF at the time was pulling in like 8 to 9 million viewers. So they could afford to have two different shows because you've got 8 to 9 million to play with. Currently, we've got 2.5 million to play with.
Yeah.
You know, 3 million to play with. That's not as many people.
No. And I think that, and it's the thing of as well, it's like more of these TV deals means that there's less you can do on the WWE network and it gets a bit harder to keep up and stay up to date. And like, the problem we have over here is that Raw and SmackDown are weeks behind and we can't watch them on the network because we can't see them go out.
We get them 30 days afterwards. Yeah, exactly. I think the US gets the same way. Yeah.
But you can't see it go out live.
No.
So we have to do dodgy things to watch it. But like...
by Sky.
Yeah. But like,
which is dodgy.
But there's just a bunch of stuff that you have to, you know, there's just all of this drama about trying to see these things and keep up with the story. And WWE barely puts anything in their actual YouTube videos to help you keep up and see the actual wrestling product. So, like, even though you're watching the highlights, there's barely any highlight there.
Yeah.
It's just a very limited amount of stuff. So you mildly abreast of the story. So it's very hard to get engaged, and getting people engaged and watching all the products when you've got 15 hours worth of stuff is what you desperately need them to do, surely.
Before we finish this up though, let's have this last little bit here from The Observer, which Dave Meltzer writes, the story going around is that NXT will continue its same path with Triple H in charge and no Vince McMahon or Kevin Dunn. And as long as ratings are good, while it's Vince's company and his direction suggestions will happen, he'll probably be mostly hands off. He hardly has the time now, and certainly won't come January with the launch of the XFL. If AEW wins in the ratings, Vince will obviously get more involved, and all things are open to change, from increased use of main roster stars to moving out of Full Sail to more ideas and suggestions and changes. Wrestling and WWE are far more important to USA Network going forward, while for TNT, that's not the case. Whether wrestling goes well or not, they aren't dead because they've got the NBA. Now, I wanted to bring this one up because this is a very interesting point to this. Yes, this is a Triple H product, and no, Vince McMahon isn't going to be involved in it from what we can gather of what's being written around, unless the ratings start to get bad. Then Vince might step in and start making his Vince McMahonisms. The other key to that is USA Network.
Yep.
USA Network have been demanding WWE make changes this year. And if this show doesn't do well in the ratings, it might not be Vince McMahon demanding things. It might be USA making and demanding things and getting to change. Whereas TNT, as Meltzer points out, if AEW doesn't do well in the ratings or doesn't beat NXT, it doesn't really matter. Because they've got NBA. They've got other sports that are still bolstering up their ratings.
Yeah. And that's a big thing. Like, I think TNT, it's a legacy deal for the, like, you know, it's part of their history that they want to do it. And it's an exciting new product. But they've probably got very sensible projections for how many views AEW is going to get.
100%. Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't think internally they're thinking like crazy big.
They're not thinking 3 million first.
No, right? Absolutely not. No. But this is the thing. So like, if Vince says the ratings are going to go poorly, they're starting first. So they're going to get big ratings week one, week two, week three. AEW debuts at the exact same time, which is appealing to a very big bit of your audience on a different channel, sure, but surely that's going to siphon a fair few viewers away just to see what the competition is like on that one night. So you've got 2 weeks to really nail the story and keep people on your brand.
You've got
to
have a big show.
You've
got to
have a big cliffhanger on number two.
You've got to have a big show for that October. Is it October 4th they start? Yeah. Although that, you know, when AEW launches, there needs to be a big, big NXT show.
Because otherwise, Vince might just look at, like, Vince is so focused on, like, immediacy with things. Like, he turns on a dime in a week, or, like, on an afternoon of Raw, chucking out all the scripts and getting everything rewritten because he read something somewhere. So if AEW siphons off some of these viewers in week three, whatever it is that they come out, that might be enough for him to be like, I'm stepping in.
Exactly,
like,
yeah. That's it, completely. Dig, dig, diggity, dig, diggity, dog.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you want to submit a question to the mailbag, all you've got to do is become one of our awesome pledge hammers on Patreon and leave a comment in the community section. I am going to try and get through as many of these because we've still got a backlog of emails, hence why there's no crap gimmick wrestling. Also, Ollie Davis isn't here to kind of crack the whip and be like, no, you can only talk about this for a certain amount of time. We're free spirits, baby. So we're going to go for as long as we... I mean, it's quite late here in the office, so... We're recording this on a Thursday.
We'll ramble as long as possible.
Yeah. Shaya writes in and says, have you even thought if the Elite signed in WWE, we could have had the OC versus the Elite with Finn Balor in the OC and Adam Cole on the Elite side? What's your opinion?
That would have been cool.
That would have been very cool. Elizabeth Mazura says, first of all, Soup's proud to be part of the 4 to 5% of female viewers, especially since I've been here in the BLE era, before Luke era.
Whoa.
I'd love seeing WrestleTalk grow. I love everyone who has joined, and I hope that more women support WrestleTalk. Y'all really did help in making wrestling more accessible to me when I first started watching, and you're a big part of why I'm still a wrestling fan. As for my actual question, is there ever going to be another Dave Meltzer in terms of wrestling news reporting? I know he's the authority on news and rumors in the wrestling world, but I wonder if there will ever be someone after him. What do you think the next person will have to do to avoid repeating some of Meltzer's gaffes? When Meltzer is largely credited for creating wrestling news media, how does one take over from him? Thanks for your time. Everyone at support at WrestleTalk and ScreenStalker is dabomb.com, and I hope you only continue to grow more. And please feel free to roll the R's in my name, heart emoticon. Well, Randy Datsun's not here, so I'm not going to be rolling any R's. Well, the next Dave Meltzer will most... Well, I mean, I was going to say it's Brian Alvarez, because it feels like he's always been kind of, you know, positioned to have the baton handed over. But
true.
Alvarez feels like he's less interested in writing Observer-style newsletters.
Yeah, I think the thing is, the Dave Meltzer of wrestling will always be Dave Meltzer, and we're now in a completely different era where potentially it's not necessary to have a Dave Meltzer. And I think also there is a much broader spectrum of people collating and finding and speaking to sources and getting this information from people and putting it out there. There's so many other sites doing it. That once Dave stops, really what we've lost is someone, like, we've just lost someone who is as respected as he is. And exactly. I think that's the thing with Meltzer, is like, he's been right so often and is so in with so many wrestling companies and wrestlers and promoters and etc. that people do take his word as gospel, even though a lot of stuff that Meltzer says is sometimes his own spin on it and him speculating out loud.
Or he's been fed duff information.
So they're, you know, he's wrong often as much as he's right.
Absolutely.
But he's right a lot.
Yeah.
And he's just saying what he's heard in the spectrum of rumours. Lots of people are doing that. There'll always be room for that. I just don't think people will be as prolific as Meltzer has been, because... Man, the guy writes.
Yeah, I mean, he
and
writes.
Talks and, oh, and
man.
Talks.
He is a working machine. And I think that's it. When people say, like, who's the next Dave Meltzer, you've got to say, like, it's whoever's got that same work ethic.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at someone like a Sean Ross Sapp. I think Sapp's got a crazy work ethic for the sort of work that he does. So I think that he's a really, really good dude in this field. But Meltzer's work ethic is, like, he lives, sleeps, and breathes wrestling. Mm-hmm. As soon as he's woken up, he's watching wrestling.
Yep.
When he's going, before he's going to bed, he's either writing the newsletter or he's doing radio shows or he's watching wrestling.
Yep.
He watches every single match he can get his hands on because he wants to have the best possible knowledge of it.
Yeah, it will be absolutely, it will be a site that has the Meltzer stamp. Now, it cannot be one person anymore, because Meltzer also came up at a time where there was much less of this in a huge public sphere, he was the first of them,
it in the 1970s when no one else was doing this sort of thing. So yeah, so he's kind of created this sort of legacy for himself, because he was the first to do it, you know. And then Alvarez came along 20 years later, and now we've got sort of a new crop of guys that are coming in using Twitter, like, you know, WrestleVotes. Maybe it could be him, whoever WrestleVotes may be. Dan has says, since Defiant has folded and Jim Small Smallman has announced that he'll leave Progress for NXT UK as well, as WWE apparently not allowing their talents to appear on rival streaming services anymore, anything that isn't WXW, Progress, OTT, or ICW. A lot of people feel confirmed in their theory that WWE wants to eliminate the UK indie scene. But then there is talent like Hooligan Marcus Cool, a wrestler from New Zealand, who argues that WWE offer more money, instant healthcare in the arena, and a fantastic presentation due to the product's quality level. I wonder, where do you stand? Is the UK scene on a decline because of WWE, or is it actually on the up because everything is slowly coming under one roof with better pay and other benefits for the talent? Have a nice day, Dan.
So I don't think the two things are mutually exclusive.
I
believe they coexist in the fact that WWE UK, like... your man says, is very much giving talent pay that they need, healthcare that they need, things that they need, training that they need. Like, you know, flying in the people from WWE US to come and train in the performance center in the UK, running a performance center and a training school. These are all really good things for the UK indie scene. But if they're not allowed to then go out and appear on the indie scene, that is bad for the indie scene, because WWE NXT UK is not part of the indie scene.
No, it's not.
Properly.
No.
It is its own thing, very closed off, like WWE is.
Yeah, no, completely. And it's, I think the way to look at this is to look at how NXT UK was set up initially. I mean, it was done for completely cynical reasons, which we're not going to go into. We've kind of like, you know, drummed that horse to death, really. But it should be noted that when they were signing NXT UK contracts, the idea was you can also still work the indie scenes.
Yep.
And that has just been slowly chipped away and brought back and taken away and taken away and taken away. And then it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to run this show. Oh, actually, no, you're not allowed to work that show anymore. Oh, I've booked this date. No, you're not allowed to do that anymore. I'm going to work with this show. Oh, they got on a streaming service? Absolutely not. Unless you can work with one of our guys and it's not taped. Yeah. And so it's just more and more chipping away to the fact now that they are closed off from the world. It's effectively what Justin Sizem said was going to happen. And everyone said, from NXT UK, I hasten to add, was that he was wrong, and he was completely right.
He was right. But I think this is the thing with it as well. It's like, it is, the problem is, like, it's great for the wrestlers, and you can view it from that perspective as much as you like. It is really good for the guys that got signed and the girls that got signed. It's bad for the promotions, because how many indie promotions are struggling or going under?
Defiant closed their doors NXT
because
UK.
You can't sign the big name draws that were built up on the UK indie scene in the last 5 years.
That's it.
So, and it's weirdly, it's also really great for a crop of new young talent, because those shows that are surviving, they're getting pushed into the more mainstream picture. And things like Rev Pro putting young guys from the UK up against big names from Japan. That's freaking fantastic for those guys. But Rev Pro is lucky because it's got that great relationship with New Japan.
That's it. Then using the New Japan guys and the names that they've got left to be able to still sell those tickets.
Exactly.
Because they need to then start building up this new crop of talent. Unfortunately for Defiant, they didn't have that luxury.
Yeah.
They started building storylines around a lot of these guys. They started a storyline with Ilya Dragunov, and then the next thing they know is just like, he's not allowed to work for you anymore.
Yes.
And he got pulled from all their shows. All the storylines that they had got completely taken away.
And there's an unfortunate thing as well, is that the ecosystem in the UK is not as cross-pollinated as the American ecosystem, where, like, you have territories and stuff like that. In the UK, it's the UK scene, and then you book talent that also flies to Japan and appears there. So, like, the UK scene has lost Will Ospreay to a New Japan contract, but he also just chose to move out there. So, like, even if he can work UK shows, it's very hard to, because you've got to fly him back over. So, like, just the sheer distance between us and other places that also do wrestling is hampering the UK scene.
So, I think you can look at it from both ways, as you said. But I would always look at the idea that it was never supposed to be this way. And it's the same with NXT in 2015. They had plans, Samoa Joe, Rhino, and Jushin Thunder Liger, essentially. Those were the three guys that signed non-exclusive deals with WWE. That Joe could work NXT, but he could also work in other companies. Same as Rhino. Jushin Thunder Liger was working for New Japan, but was also going to do more NXT dates. But very, very quickly, it was like, if they're not exclusive, they're not here. And we're not signing them. You know, you're signing exclusive or you're not doing it at all.
Yep.
That's the WWE way. Thank you to the American Dadass, Jesse Long, who wrote a very long post about why he's not happy about Hulk Hogan. I won't read the whole thing out because it is very, very long. But thank you for your post. There was no question there either. He essentially, at the end, was like, sorry, I just ranted. There was no real question there.
Just wanted to get this off my chest.
Josh the Lock, not Johnson, says, hi, Ollie, Luke, Fakedor, Pete, Randy, housemate, Hyman. I was wondering what your thoughts are on Jazzy Gabert. I saw one match on the network with her a while back, and it stuck in my head since. She needs some character work, but she has main event written all over her. Her strength and look reminds me a lot of China. What are your thoughts on her?
She's great. Yeah, she's definitely got like a presence that a lot of other female competitors don't have. It's just the sheer size of her. She's like
completely
got that like bodybuilder physique,
yeah,
dominant power that, you know, WWE gives to Nia Jax.
Yeah. And if I remember the story correctly, she took quite a shine to Ollie Davis when the one time that he did meet her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently so. Abhiram has got a question here who says, the music for most of the new wrestlers is so bad, in my opinion. From the new crop of talent, only Angel Garza and Joaquin Wild have good music. Since heel Io Shirai's music is new too, we'll count that in. But has there been any good entrance music produced by WWE in the past year? Out of all the people in the breakout tournament, most of the themes are unlistenable. Literally, I can't hear them. I'm pretty sure it's just a Titantron and no music. What do you guys think?
The music is dross now.
It is,
isn't
yeah.
It?
We were talking about this in the NXT.
We were talking about the NXT Ramble, and it's like there's no pop to it. There's no like sting at the beginning to make you sit up and go, oh, this guy's coming out. Like, people are just cheering because a name comes on the screen. It's like that should never ever be the case. Io Shirai, I think, is the only outlier amongst that in the new crop of like music that's happened. But I think that's because it goes so well with her look to have a slightly more downbeat bit of music.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, we're so past the days of the Undisputed Era's brilliant
boom.
Like, yeah, but also just that's just a fantastic riff on
it's a wicked
the sort of
rage.
DX
yeah, totally.
Type music. It's so good.
And I think as well, it's all about the presentation of it. Mm-hmm. Because Kushida, you can tell that they would think have already paid him to be a star because he's been given the big dramatic entrance.
Yeah.
Damian Priest is someone they clearly think is going to be a star because he's been given the big dramatic entrance. Everyone else has just got, here is some music.
Yeah.
And it's the most generic music.
Keith Lee's new music's quite good.
Which he did himself. Yeah.
So that's the thing. Unless you can make your own music now, you're kind of lumped with whatever they type into audio networks. Like generic cowboy.
Shia back again, who says, would you guys ever consider making a behind the scenes video of a day in WrestleTalk for 800,000 subscribers? Love the consistency. It's not going to be that interesting.
You would be bored.
Bored.
AF.
Absolutely. It's
six
really...
people sat in a room with headphones on, not talking to each other.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's fun working here, don't get me wrong. And I love making these videos and I love hanging out with, like, essentially my best friends on a daily basis. Mm. But I don't know if that's a fun thing to watch because it is us just doing a lot of work.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Is like, you see, the most of the chat that we have in a day happens on screen.
And it's inane.
Yeah, and it's inane. Yeah. So, like, I think you already see the majority of us talking to each other.
You
wouldn't glean any more information from watching us behind the scenes.
And I don't think you need to see us standing in front of a green screen, fluffing a line, moving the prompter back up, standing back in line, and then doing it again. Because we're recording things
on our own. Swearing at the prompter.
Swearing at the prompter, and come on, drilling started. Like, you know, I'll go back to the office, and our editor will say, you've sent me the wrong rushes. And we're like, oops, okay, here's the new one. I don't think it's that interesting to watch. Reese says, hello, lovely boys, having a lovely time. Except for you, Randy. Get back in your lovely non-corner and think about what you did. A very simple question. Other than Goldberg feels bad for having a dud match, boo bloody who, what was the point of Goldberg versus Ziggler? Because as far as I can tell, the only thing it achieved was to once again make the current roster feel inferior to the legends. How can we still be invested in them when someone who was presented as being on the same level as the WWE champion 2 months ago gets squashed in less than 2 minutes by someone who won't be seen again? I don't know, maybe I'm just disappointed at needing to vent since I thought they'd actually start using legends to get over current stars with the Fiend's attack on Mick Foley and Kurt Angle. Or pining for someone like Randy Orton's ledger killing gimmick. Just wanted to get your opinion, I guess. Kind regards, Reese.
Well, using Mick Foley and Kurt Angle to put over the Fiend isn't saying much.
No.
Like, and the King. Like, yeah, they're all so injured or old that
and
they can't
Angle
wrestle. They're not really allowed to wrestle anymore.
Angle losing a WrestleMania did nothing for Baron Corbin.
Well, Angle shouldn't be wrestling. Frankly, look at him. Like, the poor man.
Poor man.
Poor, incredibly talented man who can't really be as talented as he was anymore.
And
but,
really,
like, I think, and the thing is, the Goldberg, I have no idea what's going on with Dolph Ziggler. I don't understand. I didn't understand the booking of the Goldberg thing because he was feuding with The Miz to then have a rumoured match with Shawn Michaels to then eventually have a match with Goldberg.
Yeah.
And like I said in my news about that, it's the Rube Goldberg method of booking. It's a machine that makes no sense and takes a really long route to get to where it needs to go. It just, I don't understand.
Well, the story goes, that Paul Heyman loves Goldberg, mm-hmm. and he wants to treat Goldberg the same way that Bruno Sammartino was treated at the end of his career, which is that he was in the New York area, the New York territory, and he'd do one or two shows a year, and he'd come back, and it's like, oh my God, Bruno's back.
Yeah.
I've got to go see these matches. It's the old John Wayne character coming in for one last gunfight.
I buy that.
So that's the position Goldberg is in now. He's just going to come in and do two shows a year, and he's just going to be treated like this larger-than-life mythical creature that's like, oh my God, I can't believe he's back again.
But to take on freaking Dolph Ziggler.
Well, the reason why he took on Dolph, apparently, and I love this, this was from Tom Colihue, I think, on Pro Wrestling Torch, who said that it's because, well, he essentially said, did you see Undertaker take that jackhammer? Dolph will take that really well. And that's essentially why. It's like, Dolph can take the spear and he can take the jackhammer and make Goldberg look amazing. So you put them in there with Dolph.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the thing. It's like, Dolph is very good, but he has no character. He's got no heat. He's got no wins. He's got no credibility in the ring with anyone at the moment because you don't believe that Dolph Ziggler will win the match. Having Goldberg come out and squash him, he wasn't even annoying enough to be squashed by Goldberg. Like,
yeah.
Kicking Shawn Michaels, I'm sorry, it's not enough to make me go like, oh, he needs a Goldberging. Like,
I agree.
Build someone up to be Goldberged. Like,
yeah.
Have them call out Goldberg. Like, you can't just offhand mention him in a three-way, I'm already slagging off The Miz and Shawn Michaels, so I might as well chuck Goldberg in the mix because he's not turning up. Oh, well, here he is. Oh, oh.
I've been spitting.
Oh, damn it.
Crinia says, hello guys, just saw there weren't enough mailbag questions, so I thought I'd add one in. Do you think commentary could actually be the thing to keep mainstream viewers attached to a product? When I was watching the G1 with my cynical, sarcastic girlfriend, and she kept making her usual comments, for example, why would a Japanese Alicia Silverstone, which is Tanahashi, work over that guy, Ospreay's leg, when he's got his shoulders all taped up? It was like Kevin Kelly was answering her very question as soon as she asked it. Because, after a while, in that case, Tanahashi wants to get Ospreay off his base so he can't hit his high-flying maneuvers anymore. After a while, that actually got her into the match, and she really enjoyed the rest of the show. Do you think AEW or WWE should put on commentary like that to keep viewers invested, or is it not fitting of these promotions?
I think they do it. I think they already do.
They tell the story through commentary.
They tell the story. I think NXT is very... Mora and Nigel are incredible at making sense of a match. Like, Nigel goes out of his way to cover a botch. And not just in the Michael Cole, I don't think he got all of that way.
Yeah.
There was a much better, like, Nigel will tell a story or, like, come up with something that makes sense of it. Like, in the Killian Dane bit with Matt Riddle, he was like, oh, I think he slipped off his back because of, like...
You know, they're sweaty.
Yeah, they're sweaty. But he was like, that still looked painful. And, it did look painful. But even just referencing that it was a botch, something happened, like... trying to make sense of it and then just going, that still looked awful.
Yeah.
That's fine. Like, it did look awful. That was the bit in the match that made me go, oh! Like, because it looked really sore.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is a place for it in WWE, and AEW, of course. Tadu Cooperman says, is AEW the best thing that has happened to WWE in a long time? Also, what do you think about Orange Cassidy signing with AEW? How will his gimmick hold up on TV over time? Well, the first question is, absolutely it is. Yeah, competition's brought out the best in them. Yeah. I also think declining ratings has been the best thing for WWE in a long time because Vince has been like, oh my God, Heyman, come in.
I think it was the correct collusion of ratings falling and then legitimate competition starting up that obviously woke Vince from whatever fugue state he's been in some sort of funk for ages and he's gone, oh, he's been in a Terry funk.
As to the question of Orange Cassidy signing with AEW, it's an interesting one because I'm such a mark for Orange Cassidy.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'm in agreement with Dave Meltzer here. I think it's a great signing, but it almost doesn't feel like it's the right time to be doing it. You almost want to establish the TV now before you bring in something like an Orange Cassidy. And how is the Cassidy gimmick going to, work week to week on a TV product?
But I don't necessarily think he'll be week to week. I think they've got plenty of other talent that will be on every single week, and then they will have Jape matches on the opening of each show.
But here's what I would say about Orange Cassidy. He's so gif-able. He has got shareable content.
Yeah.
And when you've got something who is shareable content and you put that on social media and people watch it, it's like, oh my God, this is hilarious. I want to see more of this. It's, it's the dick suplex.
Yeah.
People watch that and be like, I want to hear more about this Joey Ryan guy.
Yeah.
So it's the sort of thing that people watch me like, I want to see more of this. I'm going to tune into AEW so I can see it.
Well, I think that's the thing, is like deploying him sparingly and not having him use the exact same bit of the gimmick over and over again. Because there's so much stuff that he does with such a simple gimmick of, I'm basically going to keep my hands in my pockets the whole time. Yeah. Just eke that out over time.
Oh, yeah.
Like once a month we see him. Don't have him on every week.
Absolutely.
Because it will run its course very quickly.
And let's be honest, once he gets a match with MJF, we're all going to be massively into it because that's going to be amazing. That guy who wants to support says, greetings. Do you think we'll ever see The Rock in a match again, or is he done? And not like he's had a match with Roman, but a real match. And if he does have one match, who should it be to retire him? I think we're done seeing The Rock.
WWE simply don't have enough money for The Rock.
I just don't think the studios are going to sign it off. Like he had that one match, the WrestleMania match with John Cena. And he got himself injured, and it delayed the making of the Hercules movie that he did. Mm. That cost the studio a lot of money. Whenever The Rock signs on for a movie now, he has a clause in his contract that says, you cannot do any wrestling because we can't risk you being injured. And he's got thousands upon thousands of products that he's working on.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll ever see him in the ring again.
Yeah, no, unless he takes a year off from filming.
That's
like,
it,
If he takes a year off from filming, he might appear... WWE might be able to sway him to be like, do you want to just do some training and then come back for one thing?
Connor Kieran says, when will your new logo tees be on sale? I'd like to buy two of each color. Give me what I want. Ollie's not here to answer that question, but soon, I believe, is the answer. Scott Aguilar says, I was just listening to the WrestleMania 30 Ramble on my commute home. That's one of our Patreon podcasts, Wrestle Ramble Extra, where we review old pay-per-views. And The Undertaker Lesnar made me think of something. I started watching wrestling at the age of 10 in 1994. I caught up the prior 10 years through rented VHS tapes. What even are those? After his first couple of years, that's him saying, I know what they are. I still collect VHS tapes. After his first couple of years in WWF, I could not stand watching The Undertaker. I just felt that he was boring and the finishes were extremely slow and predictable. Sit up, chokeslam, tombstone, 1, 2, 3. The product as a whole was boring in retrospect, but Taker matches were nap-worthy to me. The ultimate bad example of this was the atrocious match with Sid where he won the title at WrestleMania, which is no doubt a knock on Sid as well. The following year, as the Attitude Era began, I saw my first live event in Boston. 13-year-old me was screaming from the nosebleeds, boring, you suck, during his entrance. Even as he evolved into the American Badass and beyond, he lost me. No matter how over he was with everyone else, I could not stand him. I hated the streak. I hated people talking about the streak. I just wanted it to go away. Perhaps it was my wishful thinking, but I said to my wife, the streak was ending against Lesnar, and when it did, 29-year-old me was still screaming at my TV, yes, you suck. Sorry for the diatribe. Now for the actual question. Do either of you have someone who is over like Rover and revered by the world, but just can't win you over, even by most measures they should? This is quite similar to a question we had last week of unpopular wrestling opinions, and the answer for me is Randy Orton.
I don't like Randy Orton.
I've never been massively invested in Randy Orton matches.
I mean, he's a handsome lad with cool tattoos.
He certainly is.
And wicked music.
And a cool finisher.
And his matches are boring.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, super boring.
I mean, let's be honest. That match he had with Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania wasn't bad because of the projections.
Yeah.
That just added to how bad the match already was.
Here's one. Jeff Hardy.
Do you know what? Jeff train.
Jeff Hardy.
I'm
anymore.
A Jeff Hardy mark.
I loved Jeff Hardy back in... I loved Jeff Hardy years and years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, when they were doing all the stuff with the Dudleys and Edge and Christian. Fab.
I think that Goodwill's carried and over that, for me.
That was the end of... Yeah. That was the end of it, because he's still doing that stuff and it looks sore and is slower and is less interesting now.
And I'm going to say another one as well, which given me a lot of heat previously on this channel.
Go on.
Matt Hardy.
Yeah.
Particularly the broken stuff.
Really?
Which I thought was fine. Like, I thought it was funny at first, but I thought the woken stuff in particular in WWE was garbage.
I preferred the broken stuff. I prefer all the broken stuff around the wrestling bit of it. And then the wrestling bit of it, he's got a couple of fun spots, and then it's... Just,
so it's a Matt Hardy match.
It's more Matt Hardy.
And I've seen thousands upon thousands of Matt Hardy matches, and I don't think I've ever seen a Matt Hardy match where I'm like, what an amazing match that was.
Mm, bless you, Matt.
Chris Gardner says, hi guys, just listen to the SmackDown review. Happy birthday, Pete. And what do you think about seeing Buddy Murphy and Roman become a tag team for a while? It would elevate Buddy and would be a good exercise to not have Roman in the WWE Universal title picture for a bit longer. Vince would actually care about it because Roman is a part of it. I'm not massively into that idea.
I don't want it to happen.
No,
Buddy's
fine on his own. He's all right on his own.
As a single star.
I think they could probably do a tag match, Roman and Buddy versus Brian and Rowan. So, but I don't want to see them have a long run as a tag team.
Yeah. So Buddy Murphy got a win over Daniel Bryan this week.
Certainly did.
Right? So that's really cool, and that's elevation enough. And then you can just drop him out of that in this, because like Roman can't just go around hoovering up people from 205 Live, like he, because he's already had the bit with Cedric.
Yeah.
So is this just his thing now? He just hoovers up cruiserweights.
Yeah.
And then he's like, "Cool, well you're now part of my story."
Yeah. Orbit around me.
Yeah. Get no value out of this.
Alex Kirkman says, WrestleMania 36, Prince Charles Cinema, WrestleMania on the big screen. Thoughts? I think it's difficult because I don't think the Prince Charles have a license to show live sports. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know if that's possible.
What about sports entertainment?
Ooh, that's different, isn't it?
It's different.
I'll ask the Prince Charles and see what they say. But I think that would be a lot of fun.
I'd really love to do a live watch along of anything.
Love
It'd
that.
Be really fun.
Absolutely, I would. Flev Dorin says, "Hello, WrestleTalk crew. Royal Quest is upon us, and I can't wait for it. I'll be attending my first major wrestling event, and secondly, and second only after a WWE house show back in 2011. What is your most anticipated match, and why is it Okada versus Suzuki?" Which I'm very much looking forward to. That and Zach versus Tanahashi. Mm. Oh, yes, mate. Also, I hope I can meet you guys right before the show. Whenever, as it will be my first international trip, and it will make it a lot less stressful and a lot more fun. Love you guys. Keep up the great work. Well, we are going to be doing a SWAF Nation meetup before the show, because there is a bar which has got retro consoles. There's got Mega Drives and SNESs and all that sort of stuff plugged in. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go to there.
This is literally a minute from the venue.
You could throw a stone and you'll hit it. So we're going to go there for like, you know, probably maybe 4 hours before the show. We're going to have a SWAF Nation meetup. Everyone can get a drink. Everyone can meet each other. Everyone get to know each other.
And I can beat you all at Micro Machines.
Or Mario Kart. And we'll just have a proper little laugh.
No, Micro Machines is the new game.
Is that? Oh, is
that's
it your
what
new
we're playing on Monday.
What, about bloody time people are into Micro Machines. Good lord.
We played it for hours on Monday.
Oh my god. Which version? The original 96?
The SNES one. So I think that was 94.
Well, 94 it'd be version. The original one, which was 95. Then it was 96, and then the 97.
Maybe it was 96 then.
Yeah. Oh my god, I love me some Micro Machines. It was an amazing game.
But anyway, yeah, we're going to be there.
So yeah, absolutely. So we'll put out details more about that in the weeks to come, because we're actually quite close to Royal
Quest. In the week to come.
In the week to come, exactly. Yeah, god, it's next weekend, isn't it?
It's next weekend.
Bloody hell! In which case, next week we're going to be posting up details about it. Mm-hmm. So keep your eyes peeled. David Sidney says, "So I'm thinking, if Dunn beats Stream for the North American title, then faces and then Strong faces Dunn for the title, we could get full circle from the Strong originally turning on Dunn to join the UE. Strong wins the title with interference, then have all of the UE draped in gold. So Dunn brings British Strong Style in, and we do British Strong Style versus Undisputed Era inside of War Games.
Oh, boy howdy. I love that.
While I do like that, we have already done Undisputed Era versus British Strong Style.
Yeah, but not in the same way.
Not in War Games, I suppose.
Not like who would British Strong Style choose as the fourth as a Regal?
Yeah. Oh, mate, can you imagine if it was Regal? That, you see, now you've turned me. Now you've absolutely turned me onto this idea. Yeah. You do Undisputed Era versus British Strong Style with William Regal.
Yeah.
Chilly Willy Riggs.
Oh.
Now we're talking.
You've been very bad, boys.
I'm going to bloody well beat you up.
Here's a kendo stick.
And some brass knucks.
Knucks, 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 knucks for all of you.
Ryan B. Bad says, "Do you think Fiend will be the next guy The Undertaker faces, perhaps even at Survivor Series or Mania, and that should be The Undertaker's last match? I think it would be the perfect time, because Survivor Series has been a bigger push to retire Roman, to retire Roman Undertaker." And we've had this discussion time and time again. I don't know if we're ever going to see The Undertaker's last match. And even if it is The Undertaker's last match, in storyline, it won't be.
Yeah.
Because there's still 10 more years of Saudi shows.
Exactly.
And he'll always be on the Saudi shows.
Also, I don't want to see Undertaker versus The Fiend.
I don't really either.
That's a lot of entrance.
Yes.
That's a lot of entrance.
And I mean, they've got spooky gimmicks, so I don't know. One of my favorite things about The Fiend, from wrestling fans messaging in, is everyone's single idea is put him up against other spooky people.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that's a really... It's not the way I'd want to go.
So I really enjoy The Fiend. I wasn't sold on his entrance. Unpopular wrestling opinions.
I mean, really, it is. What?
I don't think he should have an entrance.
I'm almost. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. I don't think it fits a character like that. I think coming out and having a wrestling match doesn't work. I think he should have been booked in for a match with Finn Balor absolutely. You promo the hell out of this match happening. Somebody else comes out to the ring to have their match. Mid-match, The Fiend just drags Finn Balor by the jaw from the back down to the ring, chucks him in, and starts having his match. Because why would The Fiend be like, yes, I will arrive in time for my match?
Am I segment eight?
When am I on? Am I after Lacey Evans or am I... I'm okay, brilliant.
Is catering open?
Fabulous. Wonderful, darling. I'll just lift this mask up, put it into my mouth hole. But like, I just don't think he should be like booked like a wrestler. I think he should be working through all of Bray Wyatt's failures, like Finn Balor, Randy Orton, etc., etc. But just by coming out and beating him up, and then the match is booked by WWE, and he obliges in having the match, but on his own terms.
Yeah.
Having the big, long, spooky entrance is a great spectacle and really like an obvious part of wrestling to do. But for the character, feels a bit stupid.
Strongly disagree. It was the greatest thing I've ever seen. David Sidney said, if it's true that Bray Wyatt has pretty much creative control over The Fiend and it's his idea, then isn't this proof that the wrestlers should be given more creative freedom? Even though The Fiend is amazing, it's a shame nobody else gets to. Seems to get that freedom. Can you imagine others creatively would be allowed to flourish? WWE would be amazing all the time. Well, Daniel Bryan's allowed to. Like, the whole new Daniel Bryan character is all his design. Mm-hmm. I think he does all the promo work for it as well. But yeah, I mean, wrestlers should be given more creativity.
Yeah. But I think... there are certain people who are much more talented in that field. So, like, not every wrestler should be given creative freedom. So it makes sense that they have to be sparing and they have to choose people who have been proven to already be talented at that. Like, Bray Wyatt has shown time and time again that he can take something and spin it into gold.
Yeah.
As has Daniel Bryan.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let's run with what they... And also, these two ideas are wacky as balls. Like... Daniel Bryan going, I'm going to become an eco-warrior vegan.
Yeah,
like,
and it's a heel.
And it's a heel. Genius.
Yeah.
Bray Wyatt, Firefly Funhouse, The Fiend. Genius. So, look, if someone comes to the table and goes, this is my idea for my character, that's great. If they just go, I'm a superhero. Like, yeah. Well, we've got hundreds of those.
Yeah.
Like, we've got thousands of those. Like,
and let's not forget,
it's
as well,
a strong wrestling gimmick, but it is just a wrestling gimmick.
Bray Wyatt, the original version of Bray Wyatt, was also of his creation. Like, he has clearly got a mind for creating characters. On that same note... Alexa Bliss with the coffee cup is clearly her own creative decision, and it sucks. So it's not going to work all the time. Hannibal says, since everyone wants CM Punk back in wrestling, what do you guys think of AEW bringing him in as a commentator? He had a mini run in WWE commentating, and it gets him on AEW TV, although he's not wrestling. And who knows, maybe you'll get a part-time wrestling bug if he's around it. Let me know what you guys think.
What was it again?
Does he think CM Punk is a commentator for AEW?
I don't know.
I think it's a good idea, but they've got like 1,000 commentators now because Tony Schiavone's coming in.
Yeah.
You've got Marvez, you've got Jim Ross, you've got Excalibur, Golden Boy's looking to come back as well.
It is probably your only way to bridge the gap with Punk because I think he doesn't have very much interest in wrestling at all.
Well, the very interesting note in The Observer this week is that because of the way that Cody and the Bucks have handled them chatting with CM Punk, you know, on Twitter, it's really soured their relationship. And now him going to AEW seems completely off the table, which has now opened the door for him to go back to WWE. And apparently his agent has approached FS1 about him hosting the WWE show that they want to do, where they sort of like recap all the stories.
Wow.
So we may even see CM Punk WWE return. Michael says, "Chop of the morning to all. What do you think Ronda Rousey will do when she returns? Personally, I think that the SmackDown Women's Championship is currently being mishandled." Yeah, how's that true? Because they're just going to give it to Ronda when she comes back. Oh, right, you're saying because they're going to give it to Ronda. I mean, I think it's just being mishandled currently. Thank you guys for what you do. I've been watching you guys since before Luke was full-time, and this is my first time at reaching out to you. I think we'll see her as number 30 in the Royal Rumble.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's when we're next to you. Just hear that. I don't give a damn about my reputation.
So cool.
Crowd gums unglued. It's the first time we've seen Ronda since.
And then you get a huge WrestleMania match.
Yeah, exactly. Right. She doesn't have to win the Rumble, but you have something set up in that match to set up a big WrestleMania match.
I think she wins the Rumble. I think that's a great way to redeploy Ronda Rousey. She feels like the winner. Like, you can put somebody else over by having them in first and having them like run all the way through, who's like a younger talent coming up. Like, I think that would be great.
Yeah. Austin Tussie says, am I the only one who wants to see Drake and R-Truth feud, the feud to end, then find common ground and become tag team champions? Yeah, no. I mean, I think they're going to form a tag team to beat... Well, not form a tag team, but they're going to form an alliance so they can get the 24-7 title off of Elias. Yeah. An Elias. God. But I don't want to see them become tag champs. I don't want to see them win the titles because... like, look at the beating. It was fun for a week. And then they won the belts, and everyone's like, I'm sick of this act.
Well, but the thing is, you devalue the tag team. The tag team championships are struggling as it is to seem legitimate. You don't put it on R-Truth and Drake Maverick. I've forgotten his name. in saying what was going to happen, I'd forgotten his name. That's how into the idea I am.
Robert Ray says, hi, guys. So I was thinking who there is in wrestling careers who've never had a heel face turn. The only one I can think of is Rey Mysterio. I never watched WCW, so I don't know if Rey was a heel there. He very much was when he took his mask off. Since 2002, he's always been a face in WWE. So my question is, do you have one person to never turn heel or face? Who would it be? He then goes to say it should be Kevin Owens. For me, it's Jeff Hardy. Turning Jeff Hardy heel in TNA was the biggest error they ever made. I mean, I say the biggest. It was one of the big errors they made. I don't think he's someone you can turn heel at this point.
Becky Lynch.
Becky Lynch is another one, absolutely.
Becky Lynch, problem is now people just think that's more badass. Like, yeah. She'd be very hard to turn properly heel now because what is she possibly going to say that she's not already been saying on Twitter to people that like is going to make her seem like, I'm a bad guy? Like, unless she goes corporate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Do corporate.
Corporate Becky. Corporate Becky is probably the only heel turn you could do for Becky Lynch.
Now. Yeah. And don't do it like Austin's heel turn in 2001, where you killed the business. Green Bastard says, sup, fellas. I was wondering if we can get a YouTube video of a day in life of Ollie Davis. We know that he's on his way to work and some masked stranger tries to steal his wallets, but I want to see what happens after that. Like when he gets to the office, reviews Raw, gets prepared for his YouTube review, the podcast, sees Randy's ugly mug for the first time, plots how to punch Blake Ham in the face. Thanks to Green Bastards from Parts Unknown Canada. It's very much the same answer we had earlier. It's not that interesting.
No.
In fact, actually...
It's less interesting. Ollie.
I was going to say, Ollie states were even less interesting than ours. His is all business. It's just... It's taking supplements, doing phone calls, and then talking about the supplements that he's taken.
Yeah. Goes to the gym.
And then goes to the gym for a bit. Noah says, hey guys, last week I attended my first ever indie show and I went with a friend to NEW Prison Break where Moxley unmasked Pentagon to help win the main event. I had a blast at the event and encourage any wrestling fan to go to an indie show if you haven't yet. It was also really encouraging to see Jon Moxley find his love professional wrestling again. With that said, my question is, what current WWE wrestler is in most need of a return or debut in the indie scene to reinvigorate their career?
Ooh. Who is that person?
Dolph Ziggler is the answer I always go with.
Dolph.
Dolph would be a way to completely... he can go and completely reinvent himself on the... Because he could just go out and have great matches. No one's like, oh my God, Dolph's amazing again.
Yeah, that is true. He's been so hampered by WWE's booking of him.
Yeah.
I think Dolph's great. Like, he's a fantastic talker, fantastic worker, and he just keeps getting given... Crap
exactly
with.
And he's been given crap for the 20 years that he's been doing it in WWE,
but clearly that's how they view him. The thing is, you should never do a job clearly in WWE, just never do a job for somebody, like, because you get tarred with the brush of you're brilliant at jobbing out to
you're
people
you're very good at selling you.
You're really good at taking a jackhammer, mate.
Yeah, I would have said Zack Ryder as well, but I think that ship's probably sailed.
Yeah. Ridden off into the sunset.
Marcel says, we might get to the end of this mailbag if we try, because we've got a few left to go. Marcel Jura says, hey guys, it's the Swabian Pasta Guy here. It's been a while since I last wrote to the mailbag, but I found myself in a very cool position. I'd love to hear your opinions on it. After I released my book on wrestling origins, Cheap Plug, which is supposed to be on this set, but it's actually currently on my desk in the office, I've managed to land a gig with a big German wrestling promotion as an editor to create and edit hype clips for some of their matches.
Nice.
Now, my question for you is, what are your favorite hype clip or promos for matches, and what would you say is the best ratio when it comes to interviews versus in-ring footage? Any other advice, and how many Walter chops would be too much for one single clip? And the answer is there's never too many.
Yeah, as long as it's like part of a obvious chop montage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the two best video packages that I'm not going to mention the obvious ones, like Brian's WrestleMania 30 monster video package and the... Austin Rock WrestleMania X7, which I think are just absolutely masterpieces of work. But David Starr versus Jordan Devlin at OTT last year is one of the greatest promo packages I've ever seen in my life. It was absolutely stunning. Mm. And the key to it, I think, as well, it's knowing what your storyline is. Like, if your storyline is so story-driven and so character-driven, then you want to focus on the interviews as well as the in-ring action. But if it is, these two are amazing wrestlers... and they're going to have an amazing wrestling match, then you want to focus on the in-ring stuff and a bit of interview. Yeah. So it sort of depends on what your match is.
Ideally, you hope that it's somewhere between the two, like Cole Gargano match number one for the vacant NXT title. That promo package is exceptional.
Yeah.
With all the Johnny goes to the stadium and he's running around in the stands and stuff.
Yeah.
Cole's training with the Undisputed Era.
And the other one, so good. The other one I'm going to pick out, because me and Ollie were talking about it recently on our Patreon podcast, is Bayley Sasha Banks from NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 2015. An incredible storytelling promo, which also has brilliant interviews from Bayley and Banks. Yeah, so those would be the ones I would certainly go to look at. Ryan B. Bad says, with NXT now as the official third brand, do you think a superstar shakeup or draft would give WWE a great reason to move a big name roster guy, maybe Daniel Bryan, to NXT, similar to when The Undertaker was first drafted to SmackDown back in 2001? Hey, SmackDown had big stars. What was that? The Rock drafted to it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I mean, I don't think we're going to get a draft or anything like that. I think it's just, it's not going to be the third brand. It is the third brand, but I don't think even when they do the superstar shakeup, maybe they will. I don't know.
I think it's still going to be where developmental guys and gals end
up. And then move up to the main roster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like it, I think that's always going to be the case. I'm hoping that the door opens a bit more for some of these main roster guys to go back down, like they were doing quite recently with Apollo Crews coming down and people returning.
Yeah.
But I'm not necessarily sure if it's going to be Undertaker, Seth Rollins.
Yeah, exactly.
That lot.
The American Dadass Jesse Long says, greetings to Luke, Ollie, Laurie, Choppy Choppy, your Pete, Randy, Andy, Nissan, housemate Simon, and my old Florida wrestling pal SoCal Val, that piece of crap Blake Crab, and to all the other talkers and stalkers I may have missed. If you'll allow my tinfoil hat theory, do you think the apology angles from Becky Lynch and Kevin Owens are a symptom of Vince McMahon ultra-rich 1%er business owner headspace? Is he purposely putting out stories where the rebellious hero is torn down by the rich business owner to further his own political beliefs? As children of the Attitude Era, we grew up where our heroes didn't take any bull S-word from rich bastards. And I'd like to think that in some ways that had a positive effect on us and our future adult selves. It's Vince now trying to raise a generation of lower to middle class fans that will think twice about being... that won't think twice about being held down by the man. Sorry if this gets a little too political and incoherent. Keep up the consistent consistency. You guys are my hashtag podcast goals for a little to no-name podcast like mine, and it's nice to see that you can make a career out of talking about tiny pants play fights. That's a very interesting tinfoil hat conspiracy.
That is, yeah.
I kind of like it as a conspiracy theory as well. I'm not sure I fully buy into it, but I'd like your thinking.
I mean, they had plenty of people bowing down to the authority figures in the Attitude.
But not the heroes, though. Not like the true heroes. Like your Austin was always standing up to the man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where now it's the man has apologized for being the man. And now Kevin Owens has apologized because he wants to be grateful that he's getting paid.
I think the issue is that the McMahons are no longer characters on a TV show. Only in the eyes of the public. They are now personalities who appear at events, shaking hands and taking pictures and putting out press releases and doing all the business stuff. But they're also on Twitter.
Yeah.
And there needs to be a bit of a separation between how ruthless you can be, because you also have to be the one to break stories. And I think in the age of social media, you can't just be the out and out horrible face of a company and always have someone standing up to you being like, you're so bad. At some point, you have to show that even the people in your show are reasonable and will say, you know, I'm sorry I'm breaking the rules, I'm sorry I'm doing this, I'm sorry I'm doing that, because you have to restore order to make the rest of the business seem like it works. I don't know.
Like
maybe you need to remove the people who are actually the actual operating officers of the company from the product, which is a shame because you made them all characters in the 90s. And now they're all
I just wouldn't have your badass baby faces apologizing to McMahon's.
Yeah, just maybe don't always do the corporate story angle with the top guys.
It's like, always that as well.
Just don't do that.
Lorenzo says, since New Day uses Freebird rules, does this mean that both of the main champions are dual champions? I don't think the Freebird rule has been in effect since Kofi won the title.
Yeah.
And Xavier Woods and Big E are the tag champs. It's not Kofi is not a tag champ. And lastly, we're actually finally through the mailbag. We've stayed late at work so we can get through this. Chopper fan number 3 says, hi Luke, Ollie, Laurie, Pete, Simon and Randy. Are the Undisputed Era the greatest ever NXT act in your opinion?
Maybe.
DIY.
I mean, yeah, there was DIY. I love the Undisputed Era. I was saying today, watching NXT, I was just seeing them, all four of them come out to do a promo together and just watching the full entrance, I was like, oh, I love this.
It's great.
I really love this.
Like, yeah. But what that means is the mailbag is now empty.
Holy hell.
Which means we'll have the return of Crap Gimmick Wrestling next bloody week.
So glad I could come in for the end just to... steal the glory from Ollie, who's been answering questions for ages, and I just come in and just be like, I'll take us over the finish line.
I was going to say, in all fairness, Ollie is also the one who is tapping my foot, being like, we've gone long enough. You know, let's not answer too many questions. I've been really thinking about that Wednesday Night War title that we've got for the YouTube version of this.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be fine on the podcast.
Yeah.
But apparently YouTube doesn't like the word war.
No.
And we're going to be talking about...
we didn't call it Wednesday Night Terrorism.
Well, I'm just thinking we're going to be calling it the Wednesday Night War a lot.
Yeah.
Is that going to become an ongoing issue? Kind of like when NXT do bloody war games.
Yeah, or Hell in a Cell.
Or Hell in a Cell, that's another tricky one we have, yeah. When they do bloody war games, it's like, oh, whoa, whoa. What are you chatting about here?
Yeah.
It's a fake wrestling pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a word.
Yeah.
With multiple meanings.
Like, yeah, context, mate. Context is king.
Your algorithms don't have time for context, mate. They're just going to trawl everything and go flag it up for that word.
It's because YouTube don't want to employ employees.
Mm.
They'd rather just
But like, what are bands doing? Like, you know, what are metal bands doing when all their songs are called, like, you know...
Yeah, like Slayer have got War Ensemble.
Yeah.
Great song, BT does.
Yeah, like Bullet for My Valentine. All of their bullets in the title. Is that getting picked up? I don't know. Club related things?
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's a very interesting one. Yeah. Well, you know, it's probably a meaningless discussion for a lot of people here. It's like, couldn't give an F, mate. Couldn't care less.
Stop calling things naughty words, people.
Yeah, let's just be nice.
Yeah.
What do you got planned for the weekend?
NXT Cuddle Puddle.
The Cuddle Puddle.
For the weekend, I'm going to a wedding in Liverpool.
Oh, beautiful part of the country. Yes, mate. Tell me more about your trip to Liverpool.
So we're going up tonight, but going back to Warrington and then going to go across to Liverpool Saturday for engagement drinks. Belated engagement drinks, obviously, because the wedding is on Sunday.
Yeah.
Then the wedding on Sunday. It is a trifecta of influences. It is an English wedding. Mm-hmm. It is part Argentinian and it is part Nigerian.
Wow.
And there are multiple costume changes nice. For the people involved.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't wait to see what they do.
Wow.
Because also I think that, like, the husband is very low-key.
Yeah.
So I think, but his wife-to-be is very extravagant.
Nice.
So I'm very interested to see. I think she'll be very much into, like, this is the big, bold, colourful Nigerian bit of the wedding.
Yeah.
This is this bit. And he'll just be like, can we just get this over with. I don't want to be involved in this standing in front of people for a long time.
And are you staying there for the Bank Holiday Monday?
Staying most of Bank Holiday Monday, yeah, and then we'll come back down.
Are you going to Liverpool, like, town centre? Are you going to do any sort of touristy stuff?
I don't think so. I think we'll be back over in Warrington seeing family, etc. Yeah. So.
Hmm. Well, if you can do, mate. It's a beautiful city.
I know. I've been.
I know you've been. I know you've been. It's just so good. It's so good. I just like going there a lot.
Yeah.
Like when we do go up to see family, I'm like, should we just go across to Liverpool? Let's go across to Liverpool for the day.
Let's go to Liverpool.
Yeah. My wife was quite, like, when she went there for the first time, she was stunned at the amount of Beatles memorabilia.
Oh, everywhere. Yeah.
Literally everywhere.
Like, swimming in it.
Pretty much. Yeah. And she kept jokingly asking, like, oh, the Beatles from Liverpool. They keep it very subtle.
Yeah, they really, really keep
really
it on the
low
DL,
key. Yeah. Lots of Beatles tours that you can do there. In fact, like, I feel like they're almost competing. Like, you know, just going to run up to you. It's like, you can do mine in a yellow submarine. It's great.
Yeah.
Don't go in that craft car over there. Yeah. Mine's yellow.
Dressed like Sergeant Pepper.
Oh, that's cool, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that'd be fun.
What are you up to?
I am having a barbecue on Sunday because. It's going to be 30 degrees here in London. So we're going to try and take advantage of that. And the thing I'm most looking forward to is this is our first opportunity to meet your friend of mine, Dan's new babby.
Wee babby.
So very much looking forward to meeting her for the first time. So it's the first chance we've actually been able to have Dan and Alex over. So we're very much looking forward to seeing them.
Nice.
And then we might get a Hastings on Monday. I haven't really decided yet. My wife might be going. I might be sticking around because she's now finished her job, so she's going to go to Hastings for a week. To do some projects and stuff, and just to relax for a week, instead of have a week's holiday while I'm bloody working. And so I might end up spending my bank holiday Monday playing Spider-Man.
Ooh.
And finally, finishing it.
Yes.
Because finishing games is not my forte.
No.
No, as you've seen with me playing Castlevania.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But like, Spider-Man's a game I can
What a project.
Well, Spider-Man's a game I can quite easily finish because a lot of games now just sort of handhold you to the end. I just don't have time to do it. So, I might spend a lot of my bank holiday Monday with the curtains drawn.
Trying to finish.
Yeah, and then I might try and finish Resident Evil 2 as well because I haven't finished that one either.
Oh, my God.
Mate, I don't know where people get time to play these sort of games.
You got to get a Switch.
I do need to get a Switch.
You play on the train.
Yeah, that is very true.
You've got a lot of train time.
And that will stop me just watching countless episodes of Tiny House Nation, which I've got massively into at the moment. Get to a show filled with too much fluff. I can't be asked hearing them talk about their problems about moving tiny. I just want to see you build the damn house. And I just find myself pressing that little 4-10 button.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, oh.
Where is the house?
Chat. Oh, we're building again.
Ah, fabulous.
Fabulous. Talk to me about the building. Talk to me about the bits you're installing.
Netflix has really got into a situation where they have commissioned so many of these niche shows that are like either like crap competitions in the bake-off formula.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I was watching one called Blown Away or something the other day, and it was glass blowing. And it was like, but it was like, it was all done from the perspective as if like everyone knows what glass blowing is.
Yeah.
It was like, this is the, and they were like using all these different terms as if like you just knew what was happening. I was like, what? How do you even make glass? I don't understand.
This country it's a wonderful country that we live in, but Bake Off kind of sort of changed TV for a little while, in where all of a sudden Bake Off was such a big sleeper hit for the BBC, where it became this massive show that every channel was just like, bloody hell, what other quaint British thing can we do? Sewing. We'll do the sewing thing.
Yeah, what's the most twee thing we can find?
Yeah, that's it. And it was like there was a competition to find the most twee thing.
Yeah.
So we've got a sewing show. We've got watercolours.
Yeah.
We've got Lego building.
The Great Gingham... Gingham Fest. It's just nonsense.
Strawberry growing, yeah. Any twee thing that you can imagine.
The Great Scone Butter Off. it was just so stupid.
But none of them worked.
Well, no, because it's not interesting. Like, cakes are good because cakes have drama. Like, I think there's part of the brilliance of Bake Off is that putting something in the oven and hoping it comes out okay is part of baking, and you could say it's baked into baking. It's
absolutely.
Like,
you've never seen a show that has actually turned drama out of people watching an oven.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like it's the idea that, like, I think even you add pressure to a completely unpressured situation, and things that naturally just go wrong in the course of baking. And like, I think any cook will tell you that half the time things just go wrong anyway. Then you just turn that up to like, this is the most important moment of your life if this cake comes out perfect.
Yeah.
And suddenly you've got loads of drama. In a sewing bee, you could just unpick it. You could
back up a couple of steps and try again.
There's no stakes in that, surely.
No. I think they also missed the point as well that people liked it not just because the baking's got drama and it's fun to watch, but the presenters are good.
Yes.
And you know, you don't just hire random, you don't just put Jamie Theakston on the show and expect people to enjoy it. No, you bring in Mel and Sue, an established duo who've got great chemistry together, who then also had great chemistry with Mary Berry and Paul Hollywood.
Yeah.
I think Channel 4 have got lucky that Noel Fielding and Sandy Toksvig work so well, and that they really work well with Prue, that the show still actually, and you know,
perhaps controversially, I think it's better than the BBC version.
Mm.
I think the Channel 4 version is actually better.
It is pretty good.
It's pretty good. But a lot of them were just like, oh, well, who we got under contract? Well, Theakston's not doing anything.
Yeah.
We'll just put Theakston on the show.
Which is, yeah, I think it's just a desperation of like, well, a dearth of ideas as well, isn't it? It's like, well, we'd best do something like really, really twee. Like,
yeah.
How can we televise Bridge? I don't know.
But we'll get our boffins on it. Yeah, that'll exactly. figure something yeah, yeah. out. But anyway, I think we'll draw this to a close. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the bank holiday weekend if you're one of our UK listeners. We'll be back on Tuesday with the Raw review, the SmackDown review, the NXT review next week, and All Out Predictions, which will be all three of us will be on that show. I think we're doing it Thursday. I think that's the plan. I think we're recording either Wednesday or Thursday.
Okay.
So you might get an episode Thursday either way. And then we're going to have our All Out headlines on Sunday morning and our full All Out review on Sunday afternoon-ish. You should get it then. We haven't quite decided when everything's going out yet, but you're going to get it regardless. Thank you so much for listening. Take care. I love you. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.